thank you, Sintold. And I think Jerry said it very nicely. Partners, data, partners, other modeling groups, and many things that we'll be learning. And I've listed some initial people who are leaders of the teams, but you'll see the numbers of co-authors, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 co-authors on papers. Now, the AgMet process has two science tracks. One of them is model improvement, where we evaluate the models, calibrate, and we like to evaluate against data. The other is to use the models for climate change assessments. But the important thing, in my view, for that's my interest particularly, is that you need to test these models against data sets on growth, yield, and water use under these climatic factors. The AgMet folks will know this stuff, but basically, the first activity that the team started was to do a sensitivity analysis of the models. And this was for multi-model evaluations against CO2 response, look at temperature response, sometimes rainfall, sometimes management sowing date or nitrogen. They did this at four sentinel sites, and that's not the point. That wasn't the data that was there because you weren't trying to calibrate to a temperature or CO2 response. And the wheat team, Sintold Ossing, Frank Ewart, and Pierre Marta, the maize team, Simona Basso, Duran, Zasso, and myself, the rice team, Tao Li at Erie, Asagawa, Zhu, Yen, and myself, sugarcane led by Abram Singles, Peter Thorburn, and Marin. The potato team is active, they're just not presenting today. David Flesher is leading that with Kiros from SIP. The sorghum millet team, we're looking for a new leader for this. It's inactive right now, and the peanut team is relatively inactive too. PR Singh is in a retirement status. Two new teams like on bioenergy, Kakani Labauer. I don't know the latest on this. I know the canola team is very actively moving forward with sensitivity tests. Now, those groups have all, the first three or four, have morphed into what I call model improvement activities because the game there is now to test against data sets on response to CO2, temperature, soil water availability. So it's those AgMet teams, and there are some separate teams that are focused on just processes. So crop water ET, we're initiating the soil carbon nitrogen, Bruno Basso, and the maize model improvement team. Now, the other activities will be assessments, not talking about that here, or using adaptations in those assessments. I had meant to drop that one out. I wonder how that happened. Okay. This shows that the locations for the first sentinel sites for four each for the wheat, maize, rice, sugarcane teams. And you see the number of models being evaluated in the AgMet wheat, maize 23, rice 14, and wheat 28, and potato 10, and new teams being started for these areas. Now, the objectives in this presentation really will be to describe uncertainty among the crop models for the response to climate change factors, to illustrate cases where the multi-model approaches, and to review why the ensemble is giving a better prediction than any single model. Also to evaluate multi-model responses to CO2 and temperature, in some cases contrast to metadata. And the teams are moving into tests against CO2 and temperature, and I'll give examples of that. We need to begin to understand the causes for that variation in yield with CO2 and temperature, for example. Very routinely, yield is reduced with rising temperature, and you have a shorter life cycle. But I'm questioning this, whether all of the models predict life cycle response to temperature correctly. This is the first very successful natural climate change paper that Sintold Ossing and his group, 51 authors, 28 wheat models. Now they had four sentinel sites ranging from high yielding in the Netherlands all the way to low yielding under rain fed in Australia, India, Argentina. Now, the first time they did the simulations, they were only given the life cycle and thesis maturity, along with, of course, the soils and the management information and weather. The ensemble predicted, this is the median of the ensemble median predicted quite well under what I call a almost blind state. That's important because the future people who want to do impact assessment will not have growth data and yield data at sites. Now, you were able to arrive closer, the error bar, with calibration. And no individual model predicted all sites correctly. Now, this shows some complex slide, but look at this direction. Going this way is rise in CO2 from 360 to 720. And generally, the wheat models agreed on a doubling of CO2, giving about 21 to 26% increase in yield. If you look at the little squiggles going this way, this is a 0, 3, plus 6 degrees. Notice that the error bars are increasing with rising temperature. So that team basically said there's more uncertainty under elevated temperature away from where you're predicting under normal conditions. And that group next went into evaluating against a very good data set from Arizona called the Hot Cereal Serial. And this is that data set, another publication in Nature Climate Change Letters. This shows grain yield against mean temperature during the life cycle. And you can see that the reds are the observed yield declining over time. The green is the ensemble of all 30 models, and the gray is the 50 percentile. What's happening with this is a shorter time to maturity, shorter time to anthesis, time to maturity, and here's the second data set at CIMMYT with also temperature range. One thing you might want to note here is that the yield basically reaches zero at 32 degrees mean temperature, plus or minus a few degrees. Now, they showed the value of ensembles. Fewer ensembles required if you were at your normal temperature. If you start bumping the temperature up, you needed more models in the ensemble to arrive at a 13.5% CV, something that they approximated from a field sampling situation, okay? So you need about 4 to 5 models there. This is a complex slide, so take the concept here. This shows the variance of grain yield plotted against number of models. So you keep adding more models in the ensemble, and the variance among the models decreases. And this was the best single model across all sites. So by the time you had 3 models, you were better than the best single model. Is that the right interpretation? Close. Okay. A little bit on the Rice team. And the Rice team published a paper, Global Climate Change, 24 authors, 13 Rice models, the uncertainties among Rice models. And this shows they did a little different approach to compare the number of ensembles or number of models in an ensemble. But basically, here's 15% for CV, and you needed roughly 5 to 6 models to arrive at you can see a diminishing return. This is like more replications, if you will. And I'm not so sure that isn't just what this is. All these models are replications of our vision of how the crop models function. And we're not right. You know, we all have little errors in this. So this is why I think the ensemble works better. And again, no models predicted all sites accurately with the Rice group either. Here's the percent yield response to CO2, 360 to 720 at 4 sites. These 2 are warm, especially Ludhiana, and these are cooler sites. But the issue here is that the variability is pretty substantial at 720. I'm not so sure I interpret this because your reference is zero. No change at 360 against all of these. But they looked at photosynthesis method, a radiation use efficiency, or single leaf light response, or Farquhar-Van Kamera, and concluded there was no particular advantage between one versus the other approach. fact, I could almost pick off that the Farquhar and Brown camera tends to overpredict when you're at high temperature. It thinks you've got this dual benefit of two things happening, and I'm not sure it occurs. Like the wheat, the ensemble was predicting about 21 to 26% response to two-fold CO2, and that's close to metadata. Here's the response to temperature variation from -3 to +9, built on the ambient for that location. And you can see the error bar is much larger at the high temperature. So there's a lot of uncertainty in the models at the higher temperatures, and particularly at the warmer sites. See, 100% yield decrease is zero. So some of them predict zero and actually think that's correct. So they started looking at response to CO2 with data from face studies, from partners with face data from Japan and China. Now, this one's a little bit complex to understand. They had different nitrogen levels in the face studies and looked at the percent response to per unit part per million increase in CO2. So that's what this number, in contrast to the model prediction, to what was observed at a site. And the ensemble of the models were predicting the response to CO2 fairly well. Any single model was not as close. Now, there is an issue here, and the models are not predicting the response as well at low nitrogen. And this points out low nitrogen simulations need to be worked at. The Rice team also tested against CO2 response in the sunlit chamber data from Florida, where we went from subambient to 900 part per million. And here's two different experiments. The models, this is all of the individual models in one season and in another experiment. I'm not too worried about the fact that the models here are under and over there, because we're actually trying to predict observed in a small chamber environment. Here's a test against the, and both of these were in the blind phase, okay? And here's a test against the temperature variation from 22 to 34, actually this should be 35 almost. But they were allowed to calibrate to the 25 degree temperature at which yield is almost optimum. So here's some scatter among the models. And here's the all the individual models. What is it, 12, 15, okay? They tend to overpredict yield in the blind condition. So they have some model improvement probably in process. This is the maize group. And that group had 38 authors on 23 maize models, another global change biology paper. And here are 4.4 sentinel sites, and going from France and the U.S. to Tanzania. But here's the observed data, the black points. And just like the wheat group, the ensemble gave a pretty good prediction under an uncalibrated state. And individual models did not. And with calibration, you would improve this. This shows the response to CO2 temperature variation among the across the sites. And if you're in France, you can have it too cold, or even in Ames, Iowa. But generally above the ambient condition, the yield is being reduced somewhere from 3 to 7% per degree Celsius temperature rise. And the association is pretty strong with a shorter life cycle, earlier flowering and maturity. What was interesting in this study is that it didn't the models, the ensemble, gave the same response to temperature whether the models were calibrated or not calibrated. That's telling me that the temperature relationships are somewhere else in the code and not part of site-specific calibration. That's another good feature. This shows the same response to temperature, but now we get to see all 22 maize models. And you can see there's a lot of variation. The variation tends to be a little bit larger at high temperature, but overall, they're pretty well showing a steady decline. I would argue that possibly they're not right on their temperature response for phenology, especially grain fill. This shows the CO2 response for from 360 to 720. And other than a few models that I think inadvertently were assuming a C3, you know, 30-40% response, they weren't much more than about 10% at best or less, and a 7.5% on average for the ensemble. Probably still too much compared to literature. And again, the response to CO2 was the same whether the models were calibrated or not calibrated. So then another thing this group went after was to test against CO2 face data sets from the German face study site. And there was a 160 part per million increase and very, very small yield response. This is not more than 2-3% under irrigation. They got, the ensemble was predicting a greater response under the rain-fed case. Here's the observed. But we have some questions as to how well that data set was worked for that. So there's some potential issues there. But the model should respond more to CO2 under limited water. The Mikowski developed a statistical emulator with all three modeling sets and took the maize example at Tanzania at plus 180 part per million. And the red line is the ensemble response, statistical emulator. Dashed red is the 90 percentile. This is wheat at the Netherlands, and the red line is the response to temperature here, and here's the percentile. It's a different way of looking at this. Now, a little bit about some other teams. This is the Crop Water ET that La Jehuja, Jerry Hatfield, and myself are organizing. And we want to do two things. Do multi-model evaluation of ability to predict ET, E, temperature, and soil water balance. We're starting with AgMet maize because that's the first set of really good data we have access to. And then the other part of this will be testing different modules within models for processes. The data sources there, eddy flux, isometers, long season water use from soil water balance, and even indirect methods. Now, this is illustrating that the maize models disagree on the CO2 effect. Did I miss one? Ah, this is ET. This is ET for the maize models, totally blind in their test, and you can see there's roughly a twofold range in variation. Doesn't matter what temperature we're predicting at. This is why we need to do a real test against data. And we don't know whether any model's right, and here are some of the factors that might create that. The ET method, allocation to E versus T, soil water available that the modeler thought was in the soil, and transpiration efficiency value. Here are the maize model response to CO2, and you can see that on average they're saying roughly about 10% reduction with a doubled CO2, some more, some showing increase. These arrows are 18 to 20% reduction for doubling that we've observed in the Beltsville and the U.S. spar chamber systems. And I trust those, and I think the models are not adequately predicting this. Here's a sugarcane example from a paper by Marin. And here is the top one is Apsim. The bottom one is Cane Grow in the DSAT. And it's fresh stock yield against temperature. And you can see they've got a different response to temperature. And I'll leave it at that and say multi-model. Okay. The potato team. There are 10 models. They're actively working, and here's the list of the models. There's a maize model improvement group led by Thijs Tullenauer, and their effort is to look at processes. They started off with phenology and then leaf area, and now they're getting into photosynthesis, nitrogen balance, and grain set. So here are the teams. A lot of papers coming out of the wheat, maize, and rice groups. There is also a pasture livestock, Jean-Francois Savannah, and the other teams. Let's see. Here's the summary slide. What have we learned? The median of the crop model ensembles reproduces observed yield better than a single model. There's a lot of uncertainty in the CO2 temperature and water that we need to work at. Consistent message, yield is reduced by elevated temperature, shorter life cycle, can there be adaptation? And the teams are working at improving their models by testing against data sets on the CTW responses. And that's my advertisement slide. We have an International Crop Modeling Symposium, March 15 to 17 in Berlin. Okay?
Thanks, Ken. Thanks, Ken. We have some questions. Please ask questions to Ken.
You've all seen this before, right? Well, the AgMed people have.
Yeah, the point is the many boxes that you can change to calibrate a model, and I agree with that. I'm hoping that the calibrations are not changing things that describe temperature parameterization or CO2 parameterization, and this could have been done by the modelers without, you know, the teams realizing that on when it came back. Okay, but we would see that in the maize this. Statement about before and after calibration had no difference for the temperature sensitivity or CO2 sensitivity. You could do that. If you take this apart to look at the components are where you have the CO2 sensitivity or temperature sensitivity, and you need to isolate at that level. Yeah. The ET approach, initially the ET approach is just to look against data with multi-model with maize, but the second phase in there, taking the modules, yes, totally taking apart, and then you see who has the best approach, you know, and it's not just the ETO method. It's a lot more than that. The water uptake from the soil and those things. In a future session? I think that's a good. I think that's a good thing because all the teams will be further along on their improvement aspects to say what and how did you change to adapt. Yes.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks, Ken, again.